The rest of you, if you'd be so kind as standing with me as God's people stood at the foot of a mountain, so too we stand together, just to recognize that this is the primary place that we encounter God by His Spirit together through His Word, where He makes it crystal clear in terms of what He has done and what He will do. This shouldn't be new. We read this last week, so bear with me. It's a bunch of verses. If it takes too long and you can't stand, I understand, and you can please be seated if you like. But as Jesus was leaving the temple, one of His disciples said to Him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." And Jesus said to them, do you see all these great buildings? Not one of these stones here will be left on top of the other. Every single one of them will be thrown down. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite that temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked Him privately, "Tell us, when's that happening? And what will be the sign that's about to go down?" Jesus said to them, "Watch out that nobody deceives you. Many will come in My name, claiming I am He. He'll deceive many. When you hear of wars, for example, or rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is yet to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places, and famines. These are the beginnings of birthing pains. You must be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and flogged in the synagogues on account of Me. You will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them, and the gospel, the good news, must first be preached to all nations. And whenever you are arrested, brought to trial, don't worry beforehand about what to say. Just say whatever is given to you at that time, for it is not you speaking, but the Holy Spirit. Brother will betray brother to death, father his own child. Children will rebel against their parents, have them put to death. Every single one of them will hate you because of Me. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you see the abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetops go back down, enter into the house, take anything out. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women, nursing mothers. Pray that this isn't going to happen in winter, because those will be the days of distress unequaled from the start, when God created the world until now, and never will be equaled again. If the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would survive. But for the sake of His people, for the sake of His elect, whom He has chosen, He has shortened them. At that time, if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Messiah,' or 'Hey, look, there He is,' don't believe it. For false messiahs, false prophets, they'll appear, perform signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect, even His people. So be on your guard. I have told you everything ahead of time. In those days, following that distress, the sun will go dark, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. And at that time, people will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds with great power and glory, and He will send His angels, gather His elect, His people from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. Now learn the lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender, its leaves pop out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away. My words will never pass away. These are the words of God." You may be seated. I don't know all of you deeply, like in terms of every nook and cranny of your life, but I know you enough to discern that I think this is the case, and I think I can say this concerning all of you here, that you are all able to, for the most part, solve most of the problems you face. Most of the challenges, even, that you face in your life on your own, for the most part. Sure, we all got our issues. I've got more, I can promise you that. And here's what I mean, with the right people around us, with putting the right counsel around ourselves, or in my case, finding the right spouse, has done wonders in this way. We can find a workable solution to most of the challenges we face, most of the problems we face. And then you sprinkle in some, you know, cognitive behavior therapy, some good self-talk, and we can pretty much save ourselves all by ourselves. And we pity those who might not be able to do that for many reasons. Either they don't have enough resources, or they don't have enough time or enough freedom, or they don't have the right people around them, or maybe they don't have the right spouse, like I have. Or maybe they married the wrong spouse, and we pity when that kind of thing happens. But we still believe with the right amount of ambition, the right amount of grit, the right amount of know-how, the right amount of determination, the right amount of go-get-it kind of attitude, we still think that they can become as self-sufficient as we are. I was scrolling not so long ago for YouTube videos for songs. And what happens is the great almighty YouTube algorithm starts spitting at you other stuff you don't want. So because I do a lot of searching in different churches, finding songs and things like that, I get a lot of sermons. Now, to be honest, I used to listen to a ton of sermons, like throughout high school. You guys don't know what these are, but they're tapes. I used to have tapes of different preachers that I would listen to. Then it became CDs. Anybody know what those are? CDs? Anybody? No. Okay. So I had those, and I used to work out with a bunch of dudes in college, and we'd have all these CDs of these different pastors who preached, and so we just listened to them when we were working out and things like this. And we were weird in Bible college, I can tell you that. But now I don't, for many reasons. I have to pay attention to other stuff, and when you see how the sausage is made, it gets kind of... So I don't listen to as many as I once did, but I was in the mood. It was sort of like nostalgic for me, so I started listening to sermons on YouTube, and not all at once, but I was listening some, and I'll give you four summaries of some of the ones I encountered. One of them was, "What you don't know about trauma will kill you." And here is an understanding of, a little better understanding of trauma, especially when the world doesn't always treat you as kindly as you hoped it did or would. That was one of them. The other is, we have clearly a logistical issue when it comes to the world's disparity between the wealthy and the poor, and shame on you for not being a part of the distribution problem that we have in this world. That was one of them. The other is, we need to, any person who doesn't vote for gun control laws, and in particular automatic weaponry, is a part of the problem. And they are complicit in this. And then the last one was, we need to put a stop to this now. We need to stop the woke agenda. They're force-feeding this to our children. And we need to put the right people, i.e. men, in power in order to put a stop to this ongoing issue in our culture. It's time to stand up for our world, or at least our corner, say, of it. But the question I have for all of you is, did you notice in any of those what is missing? Yeah, God. God is missing. Church, you see, has become, because Christianity has become, a place where we go to be reminded of our responsibilities and the problems that we face, and that we are the solution to most of our problems, the world's problems. And so we show up on Sunday to receive our to-do lists. Here's some things wrong with your marriage. Here are some things wrong with your parenting style. Here are some things wrong with culture. Here are some things wrong with your school boards. Here are some things wrong with your life, and come back next week, because I'll offer you another set of lists of things that are wrong. In other words, it's up to you, and it's up to me to set our lives right. It's up to you to set your parenting style right. It's up to you to set your marriage right. It's up to you basically to set the world right, or at least your corner of the world, or it's not going to happen. It's not going to get done. So let me now, as your pastor, now a relationship expert, right, on human relations, now tell you what you can do to have a better you, to have a better whatever it is that you want, a better life, a better marriage, a better child, a better whatever. And it's not that they don't open the Bible, they do, but here are four biblical principles that back that up. And so I hope you're going to write these things down. I hope you brought your journal today. And but it's never explicitly said, but here's the implicit message. Stop asking God to show up. Stop asking God to intervene. Stop asking God to pour out his spirit and do something in your life and shake you awake and start getting busy. Start doing things. Start acting. Why is it like that? Why is so much of Christianity like that? Why is thus so much of the church this way? Here's why. Because God is up there somewhere, if there is a God, and we're down here. And maybe there was a day. There might have been a day when God used to show up. There might have been a day when, you know, God used to intervene. There might have even been a day when God used to come in like a burning bush. But Rick, that's all Old Testament stuff. That's way back when people used to believe in Santa Claus, or that the University of Wisconsin is ever going to win another football championship since 1942. That was back then. That's never, we don't believe that now. Starting back in the 17th century, we attempted to basically, in the West, make a world where we didn't need God. God wasn't needed. Either due to maybe he's just distant, watching over us, but we have this clock-like universe. But the real reason is we have the hard sciences. The hard sciences. And they help us with a tremendous amount. Let's be honest about it. They do, and they're wonderful, and God gave us these. But the truth is, we see this as our way out in some ways, but also it protects us. It protects us from religious superstitions. It protects us from religious wars and all those convictions people hold, and then they start fighting, except then World War I happened, and then World War II happened. We won't talk about that. But basically, God is up there, if there is a God, and we're down here, and we have to do what we darn please down here to make it all work. So the truth is, if we just research a little more, now most people, when they say that, what do people mean? I don't know if you encountered, I did a little research last night. You mean you Googled it? Okay. All right, but what I mean is we need people in the hard sciences to research a little more. That's what we need. And if we just developed a little more, produced a few more Elon Musks to help us out of our problems, invent, evolve, we can begin to control our world, or at least our little slice of it. Except we can't even control the weather. Have you ever thought about that? We can't even control whether that supervolcano underneath Yosemite is going to go off at any moment. So you better get your trip out west organized before it does. But I'm just saying, we can't even control that stuff. Now you might say, yeah, but Rick, we're getting better at predicting these things. And we are, and we could queue up all the cool El Nino YouTube videos, which are fantastic. And I'm interested in that stuff as well in terms of weather development, all that. We could do all that. But the truth is, we think, given enough time, given enough funding, given enough Googling, research, maybe we'll at some point also be able to control the weather. Maybe we'll get some of that good weather down south this time of year to come north. Look at us. Look at how grown up we are. We've got the whole world. In our hands, we've got the whole wide world. In our hands, we've got the whole world, except for Israel and Palestine right now and Ukraine. And we've got the whole world. In our hands, the whole wide world. In the first century, when this was written, Mark 13, it was during a time when the people in Jesus is talking to here, his disciples needed God. to do many of the things that were beyond their control, beyond what they could do on their own, but not us. Not us. We don't pray for the end of pandemics. We create drugs to stop the virus. We don't ask God to take away Putin's aggression or to stop NATO expansion. We send drones. We can do pretty much anything as long as we put our minds to it. But we just got to put our minds to it. I don't beg God in the morning to give me a loving attitude towards those I encounter on a daily basis. I just take something at the end of the day to distress me. Or, again, master good self-talk. I mean, we've got problems. Don't get me wrong, but who doesn't? And yeah, some human progress has led to some bad stuff, like some of our human progress has led to some real environmental concerns, but some of that human progress has mitigated some of that. Sure, some wars on diseases have caused maybe other viruses, and occasionally we've had to destroy a town now and again to, you know, help it out, or destroy an entire country in order to save it. So yeah, there's things that don't turn out, but let's be realistic here. If Putin would just behave, you know? If he would just behave. If Hamas would just care about the things we do, you know, live a comfortable life, have a nice retirement, they wouldn't be doing these things. People would just wash their hands, eat really good food, exercise once in a while, take their vitamin D, vaccinate, then we could save ourselves. And we could save ourselves by ourselves. Again, because God's up there somewhere. And we're down here, so let's get organized. Let's get to work. Let's get busy. The solution is just around the corner. The truth is, we're not looking hard enough. We're not Googling long enough, deep enough. We're just not voting the right way. You know, if you just voted the right way, all these problems would go away. They would be gone, eliminated. And then we read, at that time, people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory, and he'll send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. I think it's why on this second Sunday in Advent, Jesus insists that we talk about God rather than ourselves. Because behind this, and it is kind of wonky language that he's using, and you can spin yourselves trying to like predict things. I don't suggest he uses this to predict anything or to even necessarily read it literally and how exactly it's going to look when he comes. But behind his apocalyptic imagery, his interventionist imagery, is a massive countercultural claim, a massive one. And it's this: if things are ever going to be set right, and I mean set right, ultimately speaking, if things are ever going to be set right between God and human beings, if things are ever going to be set right between humans, and I don't just mean interpersonal relationships, as important as they are, I don't just mean your marriage. I mean globally speaking. I mean nations and other nations that aren't just relating to each other based on fear and power. If those relationships between nations are ever going to be set right, if our relationship as human beings with the earth, creation, environment, are ever going to be set right, God's going to have to do it. God is going to have to do it. The same one who lovingly created the world, brought about light where there was only darkness, pushed back chaos in order to bring order, brought life where there was only death, forgiveness where there was only sin. Here's why. If he can't, we don't stand a chance. Period. We don't stand a chance. Some of you are familiar with this man, Thomas Hand. He became sadly famous. He's an Irishman living in Israel. And they caught him in a raw moment when he found out his daughter was killed in those terrorist attacks recently in Israel. And he's the one, I quote, who said, "It was a blessing to find out she was killed, because it was far better than all the other options that could be happening to her." Fast forward. She's found alive and returned to him in a pretty raw moment. And embrace. Let's put yourself in that person's shoes, what that must have felt like. And in a subsequent interview, the journalist asked, does she know that one of her moms was killed? And he said, no, she didn't. He goes, in fact, I asked the psychologist who's working with these released hostages on post-traumatic work if I should tell her. And she's like, yeah, you need to tell her. And he's like, how? Directly. So that she can close the door on all hope and begin to cope. So let me, brothers and sisters, tell you directly, if God doesn't do this, the door on hope is closed, and it's time to begin coping. Coping with the meaninglessness of it all. The meaninglessness of all, any pain that you've ever faced, but also globally speaking, suffering, there is none. Now, Nietzsche said, you can find some little bit of meaning in your own personal individual life, but there's no meaning to your random life or mine. There's not even any meaning to your virtue. It's all chaos and random. May the strongest survive. If he doesn't do this, there is no hope. I once asked a pastor who made a fairly substantial change in his life. He left a fairly significant ministry, substantial ministry, in fact, and I asked him, how did you know it was time to go? And he said, well, I got to a place of starting to think about the church that I was in, and I started to realize that he grew tired of the way that pretty much all the problems that they faced were trivial, and they were primarily first world problems is what they were facing as a church. And then after some more pause, he began reflecting on his church. He goes, I came to realize that our community was basically a community trying to, we were like-minded, upper middle class folks trying to get other upper middle class folks to choose us as the better option in town. And then a long, awkward pause. We weren't on mission. And so I wanted to try my hand in something that if God wasn't in it, I would fall on my face. If God didn't do it, I'd be an utter failure. And I said, and? He goes, I found out God is far more resourceful than I could ever have imagined. See, the distant God of the philosophers, the therapeutic God within us, which is none other than ourselves, that's about as much God as we can take, and maybe sprinkle in some moral teachings by Jesus and others. But this Jesus, the apocalyptic one, the one who is named God Saves, the one who is named Emmanuel, God with us, the one who says, I'm the only one who has the ability to bring my world into this one, we don't like that one so much. See, Advent accuses us not of asking God for too much. I think it actually accuses us of asking God for too little. And it's why most of what you find within Christianity today, most of what we find within even churches thus today, is limited to what we can do, limited to what we can provide, limited to what we can accomplish even together. And we find this, I think, most symptomatic, even if you think about our prayers and our prayer life. If we, of course, pray. What do we typically pray for in our lives, again, if we pray? Maybe for someone who's sick. Maybe if we're sick. None of that, by the way, is wrong. We should continue to pray for people who are sick. We just don't risk what Jesus asked us to pray for. That's too much. God, may your world come into this one. May your kingdom come. Your will be done. That's too risky. May you come close. Came across one other sermon, quickly, from a well-known pastor. I won't name him. That's unprofessional. think the title was, How Do You Get Close to God? Or How Do You Get Close to Heaven? Or Are You Pedaling Too Fast This Season? It was something like that. But he basically was telling the congregation, you need to prepare before you come into this place. You can't just walk in here willy-nilly. I mean, think about it. Even the night before, you need to start preparing. One of the most important questions you need to ask before you enter a place like this is, what is it that I need to change? What is it that I need to change in my life? I was like, I don't know about that, Joel. You're going to start charging people like homework? You're going to start telling people they have to do homework? I mean, it's hard enough just to come to church, and I'm the one preaching. You're going to start giving people homework. Now, to be fair, I sometimes fantasize about giving you guys homework. I do. Like, to be able to sit down, you guys get to grade me every Sunday. To grade you would be delightful. Like, hey, can you just give me your knowledge on the, I don't know, minor prophets, maybe thread a needle through the gospel there. Tell me a little bit about, what do you think about Amos, or, you know, and I would love to do that every Sunday. Just kidding. One of the reasons I'm not a teacher, and this is why I'd get fired if I even entered into the school, is on contract day, I'd be like, I refuse to grade anything. I think it's a silly way to determine critical thinking, but that's a whole nother conversation. The point is, in that sermon, what's missing? What's missing? God. If Advent is anything, it is where Jesus insists we talk about God rather than ourselves, that we talk about his ultimate solutions rather than ours, his plans rather than our own. Advent is a season where those distant gods of the philosophers, that therapeutic God within us, basically ourselves, and all of our other vain attempts to save ourselves are shown for what they are, vain attempts. The inability to save ourselves in this world. Advent insists that that is something only God can do. Advent insists that is something God did do, is doing now, and ultimately will do upon his second advent. Then you will see him in the clouds with great glory and splendor. And then he'll send his angels out to gather his people, his chosen, from the four winds to the ends of the earth, to the ends of heaven. Would you please pray with me? Our Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, God, we bless your name. For you and you alone are the ultimate solution, the ultimate good amidst all of not just our personal issues and ailments and problems and recoveries, but this world's problems. You are the ultimate solution to them. And sometimes in the busy in this world, and frankly in our churches during this time of year, it's really a remarkable sight how sometimes we get so busy as Christians, pastor, congregation members working like shepherds, many moving like wise men traveling to foreign places, spending extensive resources to celebrate your coming the first time with family and family members. And it makes sense, given your story and the story of our current world. The shepherds couldn't help it but tell others once they learned. And as we now await your restoration, your second advent with us, we too should work, as you have called us, hard to share the riches of your first coming with the world around us. But God, sometimes our increased activity neglects your important news and resting in it. Your story filled with theological and familial and political lessons about that which only you can do. That which proclaims your goodness to a weary and frankly tired world. And with exhaustion rampant in our lives, our Christian lives, perhaps especially during this time of year, God help us. Help us to hear notes of what only you can achieve sounding from that manger. That your work that your achievements, that your solution ultimately to our real problems is the only one that has a chance, the only one that opens the door of hope and actually can work, that you alone can save us from the restlessness wrought and brought about by our sin and our rebellion. And we pray this in your Son's name, and all of God's people say,